Welcome to the TribCast. This is Texas Land Commissioner Jerry Patterson with the reminder that without a few idiots in the Texas legislature, it wouldn't be a representative body. And now here's Reeve.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast for the fourth week of May. Joining me is executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Was that guy packing when he was doing that intro?
I don't know. It was over the phone.
I bet he was packing.
Unless he did it from the shower.
Right. I'm sure he may pack in the shower for all we know.
Ben Phelps out of KUT in the Texas Tribune.
Yeah, thanks. I got to follow that.
And Jim Henson of the Texas Politics Project.
Thanks for having me, Reeve. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. We've really, you know, bent over backwards to get you on the show today.
You can't really help references like that, can you?
Yeah.
This is going really well.
Jim is here because we have the UTTT poll rolling out this week. And so we should probably go through what some of that says and means, if anything.
Way to sell it.
Yeah.
One of those generational references
I guess that's right. So the top of this thing, I guess, was, you know, start at the top. Maybe a runoff in the U.S. Senate race for... you want to talk about that?
Runoff. I didn't know if you were looking at me for encouragement or to jump in.
Presumptive nominee isn't going to take it all.
Right. We found that that's David Dewhurst, not surprisingly, was ahead of the pack with about 40%, but followed by Ted Cruz. And among registered voters, it was about 40-29 among likely voters, which, you know, we sort of sift down,
right.
But to a small number, so with a larger margin of error. So really, they're close enough that it's the same.
40-31.
Basically, 40-31. So, you know, one gap is 11, one is 9. Tells you about where we're at. Followed by Tom Leppard in the teens and Craig James in the single figures. Now, you know, people are, you know, as always at this point in the race, unless it's completely unambiguous, it's almost a little bit of a Rorschach.
Right.
You know, the Dewhurst campaign, you know, feels like they are on the bubble and probably higher and think that they're higher than we have them. Another poll came out the same day, done by a pack, but, you know, with very close numbers. I mean, I think statistically the idea that both of those polls had this race completely wrong is pretty small. So I think, you know, there's going to be movement in this race. If you were to think about the people that, you know, may change their minds at the last minute at the bottom, Lieutenant Governor, take into account the margin of error, Lieutenant Governor could be, you know, on the hunt for 50, but it sure looks like they're not quite there.
So maybe to a runoff July 31st. We've got new ads up with a new set of empty suits up from Tom Leppard. I guess Dewhurst and Cruz are doubling down on their ads. Club for Growth is in big for Cruz, the super PAC that's been supportive of David Dewhurst and that's unconnected to his campaign but run by his former chief of staff is going in pretty heavy. So, you know, I guess one of the questions, and we won't know until Tuesday, is a lot of people voted early. And some people, some of the consultants and campaigns think that, you know, more than half of the voters will vote before Tuesday. So you sort of wonder if an ad coming in now is too late.
Well, you know, the underlying thing there, yeah, I mean, but both of the campaigns, you know, I think I've not been saying a lot about it, but, you know, the information we get, I'm sure you've heard the same thing I have, is that, you know, they're investing heavily in getting the vote out early because they're worried about the holiday weekend.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think the other thing to keep in mind here is, and you say, you know, both the Cruz and the Dewhurst campaigns are doubling down. You know, the bet being doubled is much larger on the Dewhurst side than on the Cruz side. That is, we know from last week that, you know, Dewhurst exercised one of the advantages that we knew he was going to have all along and reached into his own pocket for another $6 million. Ted Cruz can't do that, has external, you know, super PAC support, as you mentioned.
He's got support of Republicans in Topeka.
Right. Because of that phone call?
Sarah Palin calling people. Yeah.
Which was one of the several gags of the week.
Well, it sounds like they're going to need as much turnout as they can get.
That's right. So, well, yeah, but that is one of the things that, you know, you talk to the Cruz people and they say Club for Growth is 1-for-2 in this cycle. Palin is 2-for-2 in this cycle, and they're betting on Palin.
Well, it's Palin versus Perry top of that thing.
Interesting.
So tell us, Ben, about Erath County. You were over there for...
I was in Stephenville. Erath County, Republican women. Stephenville, lovely place. I believe Erath County is the number one dairy producing county in the state. They have a statue of a cow called...
This is your fifth grade salt
Moolah.
I hope you have a picture of
Moolah.
That.
You know, I've seen Moolah, but I have not taken a picture of Moolah. Sorry.
Why were you there?
because he was working Reeve.
The chicken fried, he wanted the chicken fried steak over at Dorothy's, which is probably worth the trip.
Well, I did stop in Heiko at the chocolatier that's
this
there.
This is not a Weissman. Travel. Anyway. This is not like Anthony Bourdain's podcast.
But actually, here. I do want to hear about this though, because
well, yeah, the Arath County Republican women had a thing with it was their Senate forum. They got four Senate candidates to show up: Tom Leppert, Ted Cruz, Addison. I'm forgetting his name.
Glenn
Addison, and the woman
Pettinger.
Leland Pettinger.
Leland Pettinger. Yeah. sorry, I had no idea who she was until she showed up. Apparently, I still don't know who she is.
You realize we don't edit this, right?
Yeah, I know. Oh, trust me, I know. So it was those four candidates, and they were just so excited about it. You know, you walk in, like 20 different people come up and shake your hand, thanking you for being there. A good bit of press.
You being the candidates.
The press.
Oh.
Washington Times was there. Dallas Morning News was there. San Antonio Houston was there. I was there. And NPR was there. National NPR
redundant.
Came in. So it was a big event for them. They had a blast with it. But I did think it was very interesting. The first question out of the box was, so how are you going to stop the spread of Sharia law in the United States?
This was from the audience or from the moderator?
This was, well, it was...
Was that something that Ted Cruz had suggested via text?
He wasn't there until late, right?
Yeah, he showed up about... He actually didn't get a chance to answer the Sharia law question. He showed up late.
Was that a Wayne Slater question?
No, it was from the moderator, but I think they had pulled questions from the audience and then the moderator asked them all. But the interesting thing that I thought... Leppert got mad during the event. His ending remarks were very pointed, you know, talking about Cruz, specifically pointing to him, saying, you know, this man is a horrible person. Well, he doesn't say horrible person, but, you know, doing all the attacks about Chinese companies. And, you know, this man is taking credit for a lot of stuff that the state of Texas has done and the attorney general has done that he hasn't done any of it on. Really pointed. Yeah, really hit it. But one of the things that I think got him mad is so Cruz shows up like an hour late. And to help Cruz catch up, they essentially ask him multiple questions in a row. And Leppard's just sitting there like, so he's getting a 30-minute speech to end this event? Is that what we're going to do? And you can see his people getting up and going over and talking to the moderator and like, you know, could we do something where it's not 30 minutes of just Ted Cruz right at the end of this? And
so it ended up with 30 minutes of Ted Cruz.
It ended up with 30 minutes of Ted Cruz. Wow. It was and even Leila Pettinger even gets up and talks about what a great person Ted Cruz's father is for her closing speech. So yeah, Leppert was just like, oh yeah, well how about this? He's an idiot. I hate him. But you know,
I think Leppert's secret is that he's always mad.
Pop culture tie-in.
Well, Cruz was crowing. This was the afternoon of after the poll had come out from the Tribune and University of Texas showing that he was within, you know, runoff striking distance. So he was talking about, you know, how all of their polls, you know, say when you drill down to the most conservative people within the race, that he's double digits ahead of Dewhurst. And that if we get to a runoff and it's, you know, July 31st and no one's in the state, that only the most conservative will come out to vote. And yeah, he says that that's an easy win for him.
That's a weird terra incognita. It's just, you know, you get to July 31st in a Texas election and there's not any, nobody holds bond elections, nobody holds city elections. There's nothing out there for a data point to say, you know, this is how many people will show up or not show up. It's just, you know, I think candidates are pretty worried about it. And Dewhurst can't come into a runoff as good news, I don't think. I mean, this is a guy who was supposed to coast to the nomination, you know, front runner. He's run a Rose Garden strategy, stayed away from a lot of these events. He's done a couple of them, but he stayed away from most of these events. He stayed away from Erath County. And, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of second guessing going on over there.
Yeah, I'm curious, Ben, just go back to that, the scene on the ground for just a minute. So
Cruz, where is Moolah?
So Cruz comes in late, gets, you know, 30 minutes.
Yep.
You know, the other candidates are unhappy. How was the crowd about it?
The crowd was mostly in favor of the loudest applause lines came from the two, I guess you'd call, you know, fringe candidates when they were talking about, you know, defending the Constitution, returning Christian values, you know, repealing Obamacare, restoring the rightful mantle of greatness upon America, you know, all that. Those were getting the biggest applause lines. Cruz, though, you know, was able to speak enough of their language for people to be excited about it. And when it was over, people were coming up and getting pictures made with Cruz and Leopard, I believe, kind of cut out pretty quickly.
Have you guys polled on Sharia law?
We have not asked about Sharia law ever before, but I'm making a note.
Pretty funny. So down in the middle of the, I guess right after the Senate race, you sort of fall off the map. All of these statewide candidates for railroad commissioner.
Yeah.
And finding number one was nobody knows who the heck these guys are.
Right. I mean, we, not to get out in the weeds, but we basically ask people what they want, you know, given the slate of candidates, ask them, you know, who they prefer if the election were tomorrow, and give them the option of don't know. And on those two railroad commissioner races, the don't knows really overwhelmed everybody in the first pass. Now, because we're close to the election, we push people. And if somebody says don't know, they get another screen saying, you know, essentially, no, really.
Really, you've got two, you know, so, you don't know.
So what we found in that race, I think, was, you know, I mean, you know, people do not know who these candidates are for the most part. They're not paying attention to this race. I mean, honestly, they're barely paying attention to the Senate race, I think, and they're being barraged
with
ads.
The Democrats in the Senate race had sort of the same thing, didn't they?
Right. Yeah, there was a similar problem with the Democrats on the Senate side who, you know, again, we haven't even really talked about the Democrats. I guess we can come back if there's a few minutes at the end.
That's probably why they have the same problem.
Right. So in, you know, just the, you know, in the Railroad Commission race, in first place, we had Christy Craddock. If you look at likely voters, after the push, we had Christy Craddock at 30, Warren Chisholm at 19, Roland Sledge at 10, in the other, you know, and then a rash of other characters, and then in the other race, in the Smitherman Parker Murray Kolb Lee race, we had Greg Parker at 33, Barry Smitherman at 22. Elizabeth Murray Kolb at 25 and Al Lee at 8, with, you know, people that just were like determined to say they didn't know and weren't going to choose at about 8%, which is a big
fall. So really,
the
thing in that race is who's going to be second.
Right. I think the thing about that race is who's going to be second, and, you know, just, you know, how ballistic are, you know, the sort of establishment in Austin going to be about the fact that Barry Smitherman isn't the consensus candidate.
Right.
I mean, I think people on the left or right look at that race, and it's, again, it's, you know, we'll talk about this more later. There's this real, you know, establishment, anti-establishment vibe going on, not only in the poll, but in reactions to the poll that I think we're seeing. So,
well, you know, this happened last time, you know, we had a railroad commission race. You know, David Porter snuck up and knocked off a sitting commissioner, Victor Carrillo.
Right.
Barry Smitherman has never been elected, but he's a sitting commissioner. Perry appointed him to the job, you know.
But not very long ago.
Kind of interesting.
Yeah, so it's a very interesting race, and I think, you know, the numbers in these railroad commission races you have to take is fairly tentative. I think there's a few kind of warm spots, if you will, of voter recognition here. You know, people, you know, recognize the Craddock name. And Christy Craddock has been working for a while. Warren Chisholm has some regional name recognition, having been, you know, a longtime legislator and a guy who gets, you know, he's gotten his name in the paper sporadically over time. He's not a backbencher or anything.
He was appropriations chairman, you know,
right? So, you know, he was a guy that got
his, for himself,
and that's really what it is. You know, when you're down ballot like this, it's about, you know, your name in the paper. And you know, in the Smitherman Parker Murray Kolb matchup, I mean, none of those people are household names at all.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think, you know, that race could turn out very, you know, both those races could turn out very different given the lack of attention and the initial sense of, you know, I don't know what's, you know, I don't know who these people are. And if you force people, some people will just take the force and choose a name.
Huh. So talk about this. There was this question about taxes.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was about the tax pledge. I mean, going into this, we were, you know, very interested in, you know, not only the tax pledge that that Governor Perry has been promoting, but also the pledge that, you know, has been sort of emanating from Washington, D.C., Grover Norquist, you know, the whole idea that the new orthodoxy is absolutely no taxes and to get candidates to pledge to, right, no new taxes before the election. So we gave people an option. And we, you know, we crafted the question pretty carefully. It was pretty fair. We said, you know, do you think, you know, we sort of gave the positive side of each cue, something like, you know, do you think it's good for, you know, to get candidates to pledge to not raise taxes before an election so the voters are informed? Or do you think it's better to, you know, that candidates not make pledges before before the fiscal situation is clear to them.
You didn't phrase it like, should candidates just mindly commit to something before getting into office and learning about the issues?
No, because we didn't really consult you on the writing of the poll, no.
No, I wouldn't necessarily phrase it that way either. I was just trying to
So the phrasing of the question was, you're not for this, right?
Yeah, and in fact, we were extra careful with this. We even rotated the options to make sure there was no order bias in the responses, which there wasn't, and then we just combined them.
My new band name.
So we got basically order bias,
right?
So we got basically 47% overall saying that candidates should not make pledges, and 36 approving of the pledges, and 18 saying they didn't know. Now, if you break that down, right, you know, what is really clear about that, I think, is that, you know, conservatives are way for this in much larger numbers, right? So this is where the Republican sort of primary action is, and it really underlines the connection between the politics of these pledges that are now having consequences for policy and governance. That is, in these Republican primaries, people are using these pledges that appeal very powerfully to very conservative voters. So there's high levels of approval. If you look at the way that we poll people on ideology, we say, are you, you know, rate yourself from extremely liberal to extremely conservative. Well, the very thick part of the distribution in the Republican primary audience is among people that on that 7-point scale rate themselves as sixes or sevens, that is very conservative or extremely conservative. And in those categories, people are, you know, they're crazy for anti-tax pledges. They like it.
So if you're talking to a Republican audience, that's who you're talking to.
Right.
And so you can disregard sort of the general population number and just say, you know, this is where the race is.
It's an applause line. And so, you know, to me, this was one of the most interesting things we found, because it really gives you a concrete indication of why those pledges are there, why they work, and why the candidates are rushing to embrace them in one way or the other.
How many races do you have where a Republican candidate is like, no, I really just don't want to sign that pledge? You know, how many races does this actually ever become an issue until you get to the general election?
But that's the point.
The Speaker of the House, for example.
That's exactly right, Reeve. That's exactly why it's interesting, right? Because even though it's not a consensus point at all in the overall population, it's a powerful consensus point, and it's a filter in the Republican primary. And you're right. Yeah, nobody wants to say that unless, you know, and even, you know, and when, you know, was Strauss suggesting, just mildly suggesting, that maybe we should wait and see, you know, that basically completely sealed the deal with, you know, the opposition that were all against them. I mean, not that they weren't against them before that, but when he started talking, you know, almost a year ago now about, you know, the vague possibility that they might have to talk about not even new taxes, new revenue, you know, it was the remark that launched 1,000 ships, right?
Right.
There was a lawmaker, I think I've said this in previous podcasts, there was a lawmaker that I talked to at the end of
the best of
the last legislative session, and I said, so what's the big topic for the next session? And he said, I think the Republican lawmaker, he said, I think the next topic is going to have to be revenues. We've cut everything, and so revenues are it. So I talked to him about a month ago and said, so
this is somebody who's in a race now.
Yeah. He said, I don't know if you remember this, but you said this. And I told him, I said, you know, I'm not going to put this in the story morning, but, you know,
I'm just going to say it on the podcast.
But he's calling now to say, please don't do this. But I, you know, I said, so you said revenues was the big thing. You know, do you still believe that? And he said, yep, not in this climate. So that's it. Yeah, he said,
shh, be quiet.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Well, he didn't say the name, though. He's saving that for, you know, the Ben Philpott version of Profiles and Courage.
May 30th. Here's what went wrong.
That was a Kennedy joke, Reeve.
Which one?
One of the problems here is, I mean, for Democrats and for independents, is that because the Democrats aren't really putting up a fight in a lot of these races, and because redistricting is so has swung the districts to either, you know, fully Republican or fully Democratic, that whoever answers this tax question right in the Republican primary is done. It's a hurdle race with only one hurdle.
Right. Or what Reeve says. Or it comes out in the wash. You don't have the possibility of any other answer.
It's very,
if you're opposed.
But it's very difficult to get too far right on that question. I mean, it has no penalty if you, you know, later on. I mean, it's not like an issue where you get so far into satisfying your party, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, that you can't get back to the middle by the general election. There is no middle in the general election.
Right.
And going beyond the taxes, we also polled on, we being you guys, also polled.
Good job, Reeve.
On just sort of, you know,
he's a team player.
The general feeling about about the state and the country? Were there any surprises there, really? People think the economy is maybe a problem.
Well, I think what you, yeah, well, I mean, I think
except
what you see
the Texas model.
on one hand, it's, you know, it's consistent. It's fairly on the line with what we've seen, except that people, I think, are, there's a little more ambiguity and doubt about people's personal situation. So, you know, there, it was pretty flat in terms of their estimation of Texas, although right track, wrong track overall in Texas actually edged slightly negative balance this right. time, you know, very close, but and there's a lot more ambiguity, a lot more people saying I don't know, and the same, and you know, sort of about the same or worse off in terms of their own personal economic position. So
it's like 32% said they were a little somewhat worse off or a lot worse off.
Yeah, right. I think that's right.
Do you think Perry's presidential run affected people's opinions of the direction of the state?
Who?
Perry's.
Oh, the governor.
You remember
His you know. Highness Governor Rick Perry.
I thought you were talking about Katy Perry. I don't think so. I mean, honestly, I mean, I, you know, there's nothing in here to tell me that one way or the other. But in our last poll, we asked people to separate out, you know, we asked separate items on, you know, what did you think of, you know, Governor Perry's presidential run in terms of its impact on its impact on the image of Texas, and what's your job approval? His job approval was on a kind of a separate track. I mean, it hit him a little bit, but I don't.
His job approval and his favorable unfavorables look kind of static to me. I mean, they look comparable in this May poll to what they were in February.
Yeah, they fluctuate in a pretty predictable range, right. I think. So to answer your question, you know, I don't see any evidence of that. I don't think people look at, oh, Rick Perry had a bad presidential run, things must be bad in Texas. I don't think so. I just don't think that's what's going on.
One number I thought was interesting was the number of people who said, you know, are you going to vote on Election Day or are you going to vote early? And it was, help me here. I think it was 61% said they were going to vote early, something like that.
A big number of people said they were planning to vote early, although I think some of that is probably, you know, a little bit of a social acceptability thing. Mm-hmm.
It makes you sound like a more involved citizen.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're planning ahead.
Again, you're just asking that they're planning on voting early.
That's exactly right.
I plan on doing all sorts of things this week. I'm not going to get around to.
60, that's a very good example. Yeah. 61%. Yeah, 61%.
I get around to it. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, 61% said they were planning on voting before Election Day, 35 on Election Day. You know, the rest, I don't know. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I think we probably are seeing, you know, a little more than usual, you know, effort on the Republican side to get early voting out, as we were saying earlier. So,
well, let's talk about some of the people they might be voting for, depending on where they're living. Some of these races seem to have gotten particularly nasty in the run up to the last day of voting.
Liars, pedophiles, and grave robbers. I think everybody's something,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're all calling names and stuff.
Wait a minute, which race is the grave robber race? That's awesome.
That was all just one race.
That's actually a vestige. It's
general
Capriglione,
metaphor.
The guy who's running against Vicky Truitt, was accused 2 years ago, and she's revived the charge of investing in a company that was selling graves a couple of times and moving graves around in Chicago. So yeah, there is a grave robber.
Wow, I think Steven Spielberg did a movie about moving graves.
He's looking. You know, that's one of the races where an incumbent's in trouble. Vicky Truitt's in deep trouble and could easily lose this election. Running against a guy that she beat 2 years ago. Wayne Christian has a very tough race against Chris Patti, and the institutional support is kind of split in that one. There's this, you know, these are all over the state. James White and Tuffy Hamilton are in an increasingly nasty race.
That's one of the nastiest.
That's one of the nastiest. And then there's this thing that's sort of like the Texans for Lawsuit Reform is playing like this Nintendo game against a bunch of trial lawyers. And the players on the board are Larry Taylor and Dave Norman, who's a Republican running against him for a Senate seat. Bunch of trial lawyer money on one side, bunch of tort reform money on the other side. The issue is Texas Windstorm Insurance Association and who's making money on that. But that's a expensive race and kind of a nasty one. Whether it's going to be close or not, I don't know.
Well, don't forget the Wentworth Jones race.
Did we touch on that?
That's another TLR event.
It's another TLR event.
Brought to Wentworth, you by TLR.
They're accusing Wentworth of getting a lot of trial lawyer money here at the end. It's a race. It's a district that extends from San Antonio up into Austin. So that's one. Another one that's sort of in that same line is the open seat Senate race in Tarrant County, the Republican primary between Kelly Hancock and Todd Smith. These are kind of sprinkled all over the state. And I think, you know, a lot of this is going to tell the tale, to back to your point, Jim, I mean, going to tell the tale of institutional candidates running against insurgent candidates.
Right.
How that splits.
Although I think also, I mean, one of the fascinating things to me, I mean, it's, you know, one of the things that makes this work kind of interesting, but, you know, when you start getting down to the level of those state legislative races, you know, there's kind of a kaleidoscope of clashing interests, and it really does point to this, you know, the maelstrom that has become the internal politics of the Republican Party.
Right.
I mean, you'll notice that none of those races that you mentioned were Democratic races, I don't think. And
no, that's right.
And so, you know, some of these races you've got, you know, the cleavages aren't entirely clear because you've got, I mean, you've got TLR versus the trial lawyers in some races. You've got, you know, some different kind of other business sectoral lobby battles in some of them.
Sometimes it's just local.
And then some of them you've got a ton of local issues. And then in some of them you do have this, you know, kind of, you know, right, center right fight in which, you know, there's some strange bedfellows in some of those races. Right. And so, you know, all of that, I think, is really fascinating and means that we also, you know, your hot list is, you know, got, you know, a lot of races on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's always some kind of sleeper run the election day afterward. We kind of go, there's usually at least one or two where we go.
There's always something.
Where did that come from?
There's always something, that, particularly in 2010, but there's always something that wasn't on the list that pops up. And there's always something that everybody thought was a hot race that ends up being 70-30.
Right.
Which this year may be the Merritt-Simpson race.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the race that nobody sees coming going to be this year?
Nobody sees it, Reed.
Well,
Hamilton versus Philpott.
That was decided long ago.
So I had one quick question. Getting back into the races and endorsements, editorial board endorsements. So Dewhurst skipped out on everybody.
Right.
But you still had Houston and Dallas endorse him. Statesman did not. And we actually had an interesting conversation in the KUT newsroom the other day about this. The whole idea of Statesman's endorsement was essentially saying, in a Republican primary where Republican voters have told us they are looking for this, this, and this, Ted Cruz is the best candidate.
Right.
And which is against, you know, the Dallas Morning News, I believe, said something about, you know, we are looking for a senator who will reach across the aisle, will work on big picture issues for that will help the whole country well, and yeah, not
the interesting
battles.
Thing there was that they endorsed against their former mayor.
Yeah. Well, that too.
Star Telegram went for Leppert, right?
Right. Started the other day.
Yeah, but he wasn't mayor of Fort Worth.
Right. looks better from a distance.
But we just had this interesting conversation about the idea of, you know, of the Statesman taking a position of, you know, looking beyond what the editorial board may or may not think is best for the state as a whole and saying, this is what the primary voters say they want. So based on that, this is who you should vote for.
You know, Ben, I think that's an interesting point because, I mean, I think as we've seen in the last, you know, obviously we're seeing in a million different ways, but in this narrow range, I mean, the role of newspapers and the role of endorsements is really shifting. And that's an interesting tact if they're going to be consistent about that. It would be interesting to see if they follow through on that position. I mean, I think...
Well, and that's what we said in the newsroom. I was talking to Matt Largy, said, you know, well, so that means, that appears to mean that in the fall, when you have a Democrat and Republican and Libertarian and Green running for this race, that if the paper actually does believe, if the editorial board believes that a more centrist view, you know, reaching across the aisles is important, then they won't endorse Cruz if he were the Republican
right.
nominee.
But I think that's consistent. I mean, you know, look, you're, for those of you out in radio land, Reeve was like just making his I smell doo-doo face. I just wonder
if describing that as looking beyond is being a little bit generous. It's sort of, you know, then wouldn't someone like one of the really hardcore candidates even further down the list that gets all the applause at the Erath County gathering really be the person to vote for if you're just looking to check boxes?
If you're at the Erath County Statesman,
Erath.
Sorry. If you're at the Erath County Press Messenger, yeah. But not if you're at the Austin American Statesman.
I mean, now, the other point that somebody brought up was this was just punishment for Dewhurst.
You know, Perry had this polling that he was talking about.
Thanks for not showing up. You don't get our endorsement.
During the last governor's race, Perry had this polling that he said showed that an endorsement from one of the newspapers in a statewide governor's race was actually harmful to the candidate who got the endorsement. And,
right.
You know, sort of famously, you know, gave the newspapers the finger on and you know, didn't run in. You know, I think Kay Hutchison got almost all the endorsements. You know, some Republicans are chasing that strategy. It looks like Dewhurst is. with some of the same advisors, I should mention, you know, mm-hmm. just I'm going to skip the newspapers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, and there's, you know, I mean, going back to kind of some of the stuff that some of the guys advising both those campaigns have, you know, drawn on, there is research that suggests that, you know, endorsements, you know, higher up on the ballot, you know, when you get to these statewide races, really don't have a significant impact. And it's kind of hard to suss that out. But,
right.
But, you know, it's at best ambiguous. And I think you're seeing that in the way the candidates are behaving, and particularly on the Republican side. I mean, you know, it's perfectly consistent to spend most of your time talking about how the news media, you know, really ought to just have the term liberal attached to it definitionally, and then to go and, you know, court newspapers. I mean, I think I'm not surprised that they're, you know, that they're giving up on it. It's very, or, you know, abandoning it. It's very consistent with the messaging.
Although, as you get it a little bit down the ballot, you know, when you get to those races where people are running and they're not getting any attention, railroad right. commission, that kind of thing, they seem more concerned about endorsements.
And I right, think and, endorsements, that's, and that's what I was saying, yeah, getting lower on the ballot. Right.
And endorsements for local races, I think, probably still work. You know, when you're talking about mayors or you're talking about right. state reps, you know,
yeah.
the paper in Stephenville matters.
Well, and so just getting back to the sort of tenor of the current races, is this any nastier than normal, or is this just sort of the way primaries go?
No, I mean, you know, they're clamoring for attention, and they're clamoring for differences between, you know, I want to show you a deciding difference between me and my opponent. He's a scumbag, and so just based on that, you should vote for me. And you see that at the end of every race. The other thing is it's sort of peaking as we're recording this. Because of the holiday weekend, you have to get your mail out by Wednesday morning in order to land it in time for election day. So a lot of this stuff kind of crests, you know, in this last blast of mail that's yeah. going out. It'll be over soon.
Well, I have one final question before we go from Twitter. This is not apropos of anything, but I believe it's in response to a Twitter fight that Evan started yesterday, and Evan right now is off interviewing Robert Caro instead of tripcasting with us, but people just want to know who would actually be the best person to interview Robert Caro. I know the answer.
Jennifer Staten, KUT?
I think LeVar Burton. He can make a book come to
I'm
life.
I'm going to let Ross answer why.
He can make
I think.
A book come to yeah. life. Reading Rainbow got canceled, man. I mean, it was only
after
on
like 25
years. Yeah. Short run.
Oh, I know. Iggy Pop.
Ah, yes.
I would like Iggy Pop to sit down and talk to Robert Caro.
There you go.
All right. On behalf of Iggy Pop, Jim, Ben, Ross, our producer Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening. Oh, wait. If you have questions or comments, email them to tribcast@texastribune.org. Thank you.
That's where the end.